Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is the circle of success. And the numbers to call for coaching on having what you want in any area of your life are 866-254-1579. It's toll free, 866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, you can reach the show by dialing 001-760-918-4300. And we'll go to the phones in just a moment, but let me set the table. The idea for this particular show came, it was probably about 7-8 months ago, and I was sitting in a seminar, and there was a sales trainer in the room, and he was talking about his sales cycle, and he drew a circle on a flip chart, and he asked, what's the most important activity in sales? And somebody called out, building your network, and the sales trainer put an X outside the circle. And another person said, the most important activity in sales must be putting together strong support materials. And another X appeared outside the circles. And everyone started shouting things out. Building a sticky website, tweeting, persistence, research. And finally, somebody called out, and I would have loved to have been me, but it wasn't, making sales calls. The trainer paused, and he put another X outside the circle. And the room went quiet because we were all trying to figure out, well, what goes inside the circle? And then the person who called out making sales calls tried again and said, having sales conversations. And then the trainer put a great big check inside the circle, and then he explained what it was all about. And that's kind of the basis for what we're talking about on the show. While any of the things outside the circle might be useful in most sales environments, and this was about sales, but we're going to make it about success. Any of the things outside the circle might be useful in most sales environments. No sale gets made without a one-on-one conversation between a salesperson and the buyer, even if the conversation is just to conclude the transaction after the decision's been made. So the most important thing for you to track, if you want to be successful in sales in this case, is the number of sales conversations you're having. Well, where I went with it, because, you know, sales isn't my primary business, though I certainly work with people on sales and do some selling within what I do, the principle behind the circle of success for selling holds true in almost any area of business or creativity or life, and is almost always going to be found in the answer to this question. In this area that I'm exploring, so maybe I'm exploring writing, maybe I'm exploring romance, maybe I'm exploring creativity. In this area, what is the key activity which must happen in order for a successful result to be achieved? So I started using that question and went, okay, in this area, what's the key activity that's got to happen in order for a successful result? And so I was talking to this brilliant guy that I knew, and he was struggling with the idea of writing a book. And so I drew a circle up on a board, coaching session, and I asked him, well, what's the one thing that has to happen in order for your book to be completed? And he began a list, and it was doing research, creating outline, develop the premise. And I put my X's outside the circle, and I asked him the question a little bit differently. I said, okay, what's the one activity without which it's impossible for you to complete the book? And he looked puzzled for a minute, and then you could kind of see the light dawning, and he went, oh, I need to actually write it. And that gave us our magic formula for successful writing, to spend as much time as possible inside the circle. And in this case, the circle was writing pages of his book. Now, I've played with this idea with a lot of clients. I've played with it on seminars and trainings. I've played with it with people in a whole variety of professions. And the result is remarkably consistent. Once you identify the core activity that's going to lead to a successful outcome, and then work consistently on that core activity inside the circle, a successful outcome will inevitably follow. So I'm going to give you an experiment for that a bit later in the show. But for now, let's go to the phones. If you want to call in, the numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll free, 866-254-1579. And we can talk about creating what you want in any area of your life. And we're going to talk to V in Chicago. V, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today? Hello, V.
How to sustain an effort in, for example, I have to do some work, get some work done on my house. Mm-hmm. And I was stalled many years ago by some city bureaucracy, but want to get it done. But I make an effort, and then I'm just stopped. I don't know, overwhelmed.
Okay, so when you talk about the work on your house, if you had, do you ever watch like Extreme Home Makeover, or one of those shows where they come in and do a makeover on the house? I mean, how much crew would have to come in for how long? If you were on the show, how long would it take them to do the work that you want done?
Well, on that show, obviously a week, but.
Well, I know they could stretch it, but what I'm saying is, in other words, are you like talking about rebuilding a house, building on a wing?
Or
are you
it's a fairly extensive renovation on the second floor, so it would probably take about 4 to 6 months, but I could continue living on the first floor.
Right. Okay, and right now, what's between you and that renovation taking place?
Finding a contractor, getting the permit.
Okay, and so let's take each one of these, because what we're going to do is we're just going to slow it down, because inevitably, inside the circle of success, the one thing that's always there is the next step. Mm-hmm. And what makes something seem hard is we stack all of the next steps in a row and go, and then I'm going to do this, and I got to do this, and I got to do this, and that's hard. Mm-hmm. But when we get down to actually what needs to happen, that's usually not that hard. So let's look at the first one, finding a contractor. Now, finding a contractor is what I call a mini goal. It sounds like something you could stick on a to-do list, but it's not really a to-do. In other words, there are things that you would do that would result in your finding a contractor, but you can't just find a contractor in the way that you could tie your shoes.
Right.
Okay, so what's the next thing that needs to happen in order for you to find a contractor? In other words, what's the very next action that you would take? If you just had decided, okay, I'm just going to do it, what would you be doing?
I would have to solicit names of potential contractors.
Okay, that sounds hard. What you mean is you'd have to ask around for a good contractor?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. That just sounded easier to me than soliciting names. No soliciting. Oh, sorry, I can't ask you. Okay, so who would be the first three people you'd ask, or three places you'd go to ask?
Carrie, Pat, and perhaps get another name from my architect.
Okay, so Carrie, Pat, and your architect. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So if all you had to do was phone Carrie, Pat, and your architect, could you do that?
Yes.
All right, great, because that's all you have to do. That's it.
That's all I have to do to get names of contractors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, give me a contractor.
it doesn't get you a contractor, so there will come a time. So, for example, if you know you are going to like become the radio show stalker, and you are going to phone in every day, even though we're only on once a week, but you'd phone in every day and you go, okay, I've got the names. Then we could have this conversation again and we'd find out, oh, now you have to talk to a contractor. So
right.
We'd find out that all you actually had to do was phone the name that had been on both Carrie and Pat's list.
Right.
That would
well,
be all you had to do.
I guess that's where it brings back to my first question, is how do I sustain the effort?
Okay, so
I do that, and then, you know, life intervenes and I don't then... I mean, I know what the next step is to actually call them.
So this is great, because this is true for so many people, is that there are two different ways that you can start anything. You can start big or you can start small. Mm-hmm. Now, very often in sort of coachy world, coachy world, it's like Disney, but we don't have rides. In coachy world, you know, we'll encourage people to start small, and we'll say, you know, hey, just take a baby step. All you've got to do is just call Carrie. That's all you got to do. You just call Carrie. And it's true, because once you call Carrie, you've got the name. And then very often, once you're in action, because usually what slows us down is inertia. Mm-hmm. So once you're in action, it's just as easy to stay in action as it is to stop. However, sometimes it works better to start big. In other words, sometimes people go, well, you know, I just can't seem to find the 10 minutes it's going to take to call Pat. Well, that's true. That can be hard because you're trying to fit it in around everything else. But what if suddenly it was, okay, I'm spending 3 hours a day on this instead of trying to fit in 15 minutes. Now I've got to rearrange my day around this. So sometimes it's easier to work out for 3 hours a day than it is for 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that.
Okay. So the question is for you, because you're the expert on you, is what would create enough momentum for you that it wouldn't be about, oh, I've got to sustain it, that there would actually be a momentum where people would be calling you back and you'd be in action and the project would be moving. The project would take on a life of its own.
First thing that comes to mind is just the absurd and the number of people I call to get a name.
Oh, I love absurd. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, massively overreact. You know, bring the entire Extreme Home Makeover crew to just finding a contractor. I think that's absolutely it. Because then what happens is you've killed it. You've wiped it out. You've blown it away. It shows it doesn't even, the problem won't even face up to you anymore. It's just going to run away and cower in a corner. It's going to go, you weren't supposed to bring all this action and effort and friends. I thought I was only taking on you.
Yeah.
So is that something you can see yourself doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it becomes fun. Then it stops being about, well, okay, I really only need to do... No. I'm going to blast this thing.
Well, who else can I call? Who else?
Exactly. I'm going to call 100 people. I know I got the answer after 3, but I'm going to keep going. and then with that energy has its own momentum. Because the thing is, part of the problem is thinking of it as you've got to sustain the effort. Well, no, you don't. You just have to put enough energy in to get it rolling. 95% of the fuel on the space shuttle is used up in the first 30 seconds. Just blasting out of the Earth's gravitational pull. Once it's done that, it needs very little fuel to actually go all the way out into space. And it's the same thing with us. Once we blasted through our own inertia, or fear, or doubt, or whatever it is, then it actually takes very little energy to keep going.
Yeah. Okay, great.
All right. Thank you, V.
Thank you, Michael.
Okay. You know, it's such an interesting thing. I always find this. I'm doing this program. Those of you who've listened to the show regularly or read the tips at geniuscatalyst.com, you know I'm doing this program starting on July 1st called Creating the Impossible, Transforming Your World in 30 Days. And the two prerequisites for the course, the two things I'm asking of everybody who wants to do the course, is very simply that you find something that you think you've got a 50% or less chance of actually succeeding at. So, you know, you've got to kind of not believe you can quite pull it off. Maybe, but probably not. And you've got to be so passionate about it that you're going to be glad of any time you spend invested in creating it, regardless of how things turn out. And the whole thing on that program is the things that, the kind of energy you bring to bear on stuff that, well, yeah, I could do that. Yeah, I know I could do that. That kind of energy won't do the impossible. But that sort of wonderful thing that V said about, well, I could just get absurd. You know, I could bring the gun to the knife fight. I could just put so much more into this than it probably needs that the conclusion, it becomes a whole different game. And that game is a much more sustainable game, and it's a much more fun game. And if you want to play that game with us on Creating the Impossible, all you got to do is go to geniuscatalyst.com/impossible.php, and you can read all about it there, and there's even a recording about it as well. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Kelly in L.A. Kelly, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. How are you?
I'm well.
Good. I really enjoyed what you said to the last caller. I love your work. It's awesome. And
Thank you. Yeah, I
feel somewhat similar, just being stuck in the minutia and the inertia as well. I have a children's book completed. I have a game created. I have a book on surfing that's halfway done. I have another book that I'm working on, and I can't seem to complete. Like when you talked about thinking of something impossible, I feel like I can publish these books, but what I find impossible is, can I in the next month dedicate 3 hours a day to working on it? I seem to put other things in priority. And I'm good in the big picture of things, and I'm good at, you know, like I could listen to Hay House Radio all day long. I love the expansiveness of, you know, learning this stuff, but actually getting it into the world and doing the day-to-day action that has to happen. I get stuck.
Okay, so understand that on the one hand, I love talking to you about this, and on the other hand, I'm tempted to just kind of, you know, tell you to give your address to the guy so we can just go do it. Because there's some things that succumb to psychology. right, where we can talk about it and we can figure out what the block is. And, oh, when Kelly was 7, this happened. And ever since then, she's been reluctant to complete things. And we can go there, and sometimes that can be really useful, or we could just do it.
Right.
And in this case, chances are it's probably a just do it. So what are the things, you know, let's play with it a little bit, though. What are the things which you're putting in front of? So pick one of these. Like, if you could take one of these projects in July and just get it done.
Right.
Which one would you take?
The surfing book.
The surfing book. Fantastic. Okay. So I want you to go ahead. Do you got a piece of paper?
I do.
All right. I want you to go ahead and draw a circle.
Okay.
On that piece of paper. And that's your circle of success for completing the surfing book. Now, what are some of the actions that you could take towards completing the surfing book?
Right.
Okay. So, right. So, would that be inside the circle or outside?
Inside.
Right, because that has to happen. There is no book if you don't write it. Okay, boom. What's another action?
It's taking the time to write. I know that sounds ridiculous because it's the same thing, but when I sit down to write,
well, no,
I love it.
You know what? It's not the same thing. Writing is easy.
It is easy.
Taking the time to write suggests there's a whole world in that sentence, right? If I try that sentence on, if I step into your world for a minute, let me just borrow your head. I'm going to step into your head. Okay, I need to take the time to write. So that means that there's time somewhere over there, and I need to take from that limited store of time, and I need to take some for this and take some for that. And, ooh, I'm running out. I better be careful. I don't want to take too much, right? So that's a whole model of time that says time is this limited thing and it's over there and I have to take it. Well, to a certain extent, if you ever had the experience, I love the fact that Einstein actually wrote this, right? Because this sounds very non-Einsteinian, what I'm about to say. But have you ever noticed that a minute with somebody that you love and fancy can seem to just be over in a second? An hour with somebody you love and fancy can be over, seem to be over in a minute, but a minute with your hand on a hot stove can seem to take an hour.
Yeah.
Right? That's relativity. That's actually how Einstein introduced his special theory of relativity paper.
Mm.
You know, and that's the thing, is when we think of time as this fixed commodity, then we think, well, 1 hour is just like any other. But an hour of Einstein time, an hour of expansive time, That's a whole different thing. What we can do in that hour is so much more than what we can do in the hour of, okay, right, I've got an hour. I got to do this, and I got to do this, and I got to do this, and I got to do this.
Right.
So you can literally shift your perception of time by just shifting the way that you talk about it, by not talking about it anymore as this limited thing, and it's over there, and there's only so much of it, and just kind of going, hey, I create my own time. Because I can create, I can make this phone call last forever. I can create my own experience of this time. I can make a minute last for an hour, you know, or I can make an hour pass by in a minute.
That's great. I love that.
So one thing you're going to do is write. You're not going to create the time to write. You're just going to write. What's something else? Is there anything else that goes inside the circle that will mean that in a month's time, or just over a month's time, the surfing book will be done, it'll be out there?
I have to find an agent and a publisher and write a query letter.
Okay, so find an agent and a publisher. What are the activities that absolutely must happen in order for you to find an agent and a publisher?
Sitting down on my computer and emailing them and phoning them and making lists.
Okay, so contacting, getting into conversation. So that goes inside the circle. Because you may or may not have to research it. You know, in other words, it may be that the very first call, you get all the information you need.
Right.
So it's just, but you are going to have to connect. You're going to have to actually have a conversation with somebody. And whether that's by email or whether that's by phone initially, you know, if somebody's going to take you on, they've got to actually communicate with you and you've got to communicate with them. So you're going to write and you're going to get into conversation with people about the project, people who can help. Okay, is there anything else? Is there anything else that actually has to happen in order for the project to get out there?
That feels like it's
Yeah, that does to me as well. So that's what you can now do, is you can literally, you can clock in and clock out, and you can look at, how much time am I actually putting in? So instead of thinking, I've got to take so much time, just write. Just have some conversations, make some phone calls, send some emails. And what you'll find is, if you write, you'll write more. And if you start having conversations, you'll have more conversations. And time will adjust around you, because you're the one who's creating the time.
Thank you so much. This has been awesome. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks. I'll look forward to my copy of Surfing by Kelly.
That's awesome, and I'm going to look forward to taking your course. Thank you so much.
All right, Kelly. Thanks. Okay. Bye. Let's stick with the phones. Let's go to Kendra in New York. Kendra, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. So good to talk to you.
Well, and good to talk to you.
I was wondering, it's kind of along the same lines that everybody else is about.
You mean you're not unique? Oh. I'm having a little trouble hearing you, Kendra. Can you speak up?
Out of a deck. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. I think we might be. Are you on a cell phone?
I am.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll do our best, and if we can hear you, we can hear you. So give it a try.
I want to make my own tarot deck, but when I get home, I don't the actual cards.
Okay.
So you, do you have any advice?
So okay, what I heard is you want to make your own tarot deck, but when you get home, something. Do you lose enthusiasm? Do you lose energy?
Right. Yes.
Right. Okay. Well. What is it? So let me ask the question this way. This is just the first question that occurs. Is what are you going to be most thrilled about when you've completed your tarot deck?
Holding the cards in my hands and seeing people with it and seeing other people read it, people with it.
Okay. And when you sit down to actually, like, I assume, is it like sketching out the cards?
Right.
Right. When you sit down to sketch out the cards, what are you thinking about in those moments?
Probably more like getting it right.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's probably, I don't know if you've ever listened to it. If you haven't, you dig out the, if you go into the archives, either at Genius Catalyst or at Hay House, you can find a show on the three dragons of creativity. Mm-hmm. And you know, those dragons tend to come in. It's the dragon of product. Well, this has to work. You know, I've got to, is this going to be saleable? You know, then there's the, you know, the dragon of meaning. Well, you know, what's it all about? I mean, does this card really express what I'm trying to? And we get into this very left brain, analytical, anti-creative part of our brain. And
right.
That's no fun at all.
No.
You know, I mean, I don't know anyone who can write if their editor is literally on their shoulder going, you're not going to write it like that, are you? You're going to redo that. You're saying that? It's. Yeah. Oh, come on. You call it. In other words, if you've got that, there's a time and a place. I had a writer, I'm going to do this quickly because we're coming up on a break, but I had a writer that I was working with, and he had that same thing where he had this critical voice that was just, every time he sat down to create, he shut down, even though he knew he was a really creative guy. So what we finally did is we had him separate out three rooms in his house, and he had one room which was for thinking about it and daydreaming about what he wanted to create. And he was only allowed to daydream in that room. He wasn't allowed to do any writing. He wasn't allowed to do any critiquing. Then we set up a second room, which was just for writing. All he was allowed to do in that room is write. No thinking, no creating, just type. And then we had a third room where he could sit and he could go back over his work and critique it and take it apart. And make it better, because critiquing your own work is a useful thing. But by separating it out into that sequence, so you've got the dreamer, then you've got the doer, then you've got the critic, then everyone's doing their job at the right time, and the entire process becomes so much easier. Does that make sense?
Yeah, great.
Fantastic. So I want you to create your own version of the dreamer, doer, critic game. And then I'll, same thing I'm looking forward to seeing my set of tarot cards.
Great, thank
All right, Kendra, thank you. We are coming up on our break for the show. We will be back in the second half with more of your calls. Numbers to call 866-254-1579. It's toll free, 866-254-1579. If you're on hold, hang on. We will get you on. And we're going to talk more about the circle of success and creating what you want. Bye-bye for now.
Real strategies for real change. This is Supercoach with Michael Neal.
We are back, and we're talking about the circle of success, and we're talking about creating the impossible, and we're just talking about stuff because we're talking to you. So let's talk to Kathy in New York. Kathy, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. How are you?
I'm well.
Oh, very good. What do you do when you have writer's block?
Generally smash my head into a wall repeatedly. No, I actually don't. I found that writer's block is one of these ideas. And in other words, we make up when we aren't sitting writing and we kind of don't feel like sitting writing and we think we should sit and write, we call it writer's block. But it's not really a thing.
Okay.
It's just a description of something that pretty much any creative person goes through. And there are a couple things that I found work really, really well. So are you working on a book at the moment?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so here's what I want you to do. You up for a little thought experiment?
Sure.
Okay, great. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to get really comfortable.
Okay.
And I want you to close your eyes, but obviously keep the phone where you can keep talking to me.
Okay.
Okay. And how, in your ideal world, you know, how long will it be till that book is available, like is fully written, like you could hold it in your hand? In 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, a year?
3 to 6 months.
3 to 6 months. Okay, so let's pick a date that feels fun. Pick a month. Which month would you like it to be done in?
November.
November. Okay. So I want you to, in your imagination, I just want you to float up out of your body so you can see Kathy down there below you. And I want you to see that spreading out in front of her is her future. And it's like a line. And you can see if you look down, you'll see a little bit. Might be in front of her. It might be to her right. You know, you'll see there's July. Oh, there's August. And as you keep floating down, you'll see, oh, there's September. And I want you to get to November. And I want you to float down into Kathy in November. And I want you to hold the completed book in your hand. And let me know when you've got it in your hand.
I've got it.
Okay, tell me about it. What is it? What does it feel like? What does it look like? What do you notice?
Cover is very colorful. It's complete. Has my name on it.
Yeah, it's cool, isn't it?
Oh yeah, it is.
Oh yeah. Okay, so now thumb through it. What do you notice? What do you notice in the table of contents? Is there a table of contents? Is it that?
No.
No. Okay. So what do you see in chapter one? Is it short? Go ahead.
A complete chapter. The chapter is complete.
Yeah. Okay, and are the chapters short? Are they long?
Not too long. It's a children's book. So.
Okay, and how long does it go on? How many pages is it about?
80 pages.
80 pages. Okay, now skip ahead to the end if you don't mind cheating.
I don't mind.
Okay, and just see how it ends.
Okay.
Okay, and then flick back through, and just notice if you have a favorite part.
I do.
Okay, what's your favorite part?
The beginning.
Okay. Okay, what happens in the beginning?
I don't know.
Okay, well, what do you see? What's the feeling of it if you don't see the words?
Happy.
Okay.
Happy.
So it just feels happy. Yeah. Okay, and just see if there's anything else as you flick through the book that just catches your eye. That you go, oh, huh.
I don't know. My imagination won't work.
Well, it sounds like it's working fine. You've got a happy beginning, and you've got about 80 pages, and it's written through to the end, and there are chapters, and they're not too long, and they're not too short. Doesn't sound to me like there's any problem with your imagination.
Well, you're you're right. It's myself.
Okay, so float on back. Okay. Leave the book there. It's waiting for you.
Right.
And come on back to now. Come on back onto the phone with me.
Okay.
You might want to just wiggle your fingers and toes. Just ground yourself a little bit.
Okay.
So where are you now in relation to that?
In
other words, where is the book now? If we had two pictures, and one was the picture of that completed book you just held in your hands, and another was what you've got now, tell me about what you've got now in relation to that. You know, do you have 4 pages? Do you have 30 pages? Do you have 2 pages? Do you have 150 pages that need to be edited down? Where are you?
I have about 40 pages.
Okay, cool. Okay. So you're halfway there.
Getting there, yes, I am.
Yeah.
You're right.
Okay. So, I mean, again, Kathy, it's not that I don't believe you have a problem.
I understand what you're saying. Completely.
Yeah?
I get it, yes. I get it. It's just the actual doing it.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure, Kathy. Thank you for calling.
Take care, and thank you.
Bye. Now, I know from having done that before that there are people, you know, you might be listening to the show right now going, what? What just happened? That was it? That was it? Go out in the future and look at it? And, oh, now I get it? Yeah. Yeah. You know what? A lot of the times it is that simple. Take whatever you're working on right now. Take a project that you're working on. It can be the kind of thing you'd want to bring to Creating the Impossible, or it can just be a project. It can be a longer term project. And I want you to float up out of your body right now and look down at that you down there, and I want you to float out into the future to a time when that project is complete, when whatever it is you've created in your life or, you know, as a product or as a creative expression is complete, and just drop down into that future so that you can hold that thing in your hand, if it's something that you can hold in your hand, or you can experience it as already done, or you can look back having already completed it and just notice what you notice. What can you learn by holding the finished creation already in your hand, by experiencing it as already done? Because that's what they say, is that everything's created twice. We create it first in our mind, and then we create it in the world. So go ahead and really hold that mind creation. Really experience it. What does it feel like? Does it have sounds? What does it look like? Does it have a texture? What do you notice? And whatever you notice, look back at that younger you who's sitting here listening to the radio show. And if you could give them one piece of advice, having successfully completed your project, what would you tell them? What would you want them to know? What would you wish somebody had told you back then, back towards the end of June 2009? And whatever that is, just know that you already know that. And when you're ready, you can float all the way back to now. Float right back into your body. Wiggle your fingers and wiggle your toes. Give yourself a nice stretch. And just notice how much easier it is from here going forward. And while you do that, I'm going to go back to the phones and I'm going to talk to another Kathy. But this Kathy is in Mount Vernon, Washington. Kathy, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've been struggling with trying to quit smoking for a long time, and I get to a certain point, and it seems like I just don't have any control. I just go buy cigarettes, and I can't seem to get past that.
Okay. So how much of the time do you spend not smoking now?
About half the time, I guess.
Well, so like how many hours? In a 24-hour day, how much of that time do you spend not smoking?
Probably 12.
Okay, so you smoke 12 hours a day. Now, to smoke 12 hours a day, average cigarette's going to last about 10 minutes. So that means that you're smoking 72 cigarettes a day. Is that about right?
No, I smoke 2 packs. That's 40.
Okay, so 10 minutes a cigarette, so that's 400. So that is, oh, math gods, help me out here. Okay, so that's about 6.5 hours. So you right now don't smoke about 70 to 18 hours a day?
I'm sorry, you cut out there.
So right now, at the moment, you spend 17 to 18 hours of every day not smoking.
Okay.
I mean, that's true, right? I'm not making that up.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
I never thought of it that way.
So here's the question. What if, you know, the goal was, okay, I want to get to 20 hours.
Uh-huh.
If you had to give up two more hours,
uh-huh,
which ones would you give up? So you're still going to be smoking 4 hours a day, but you're going to now increase the amount of time you're not smoking from 17, 18 hours to 20.
I would probably try to space out the time between cigarettes.
Okay, cool. So what would be a good way, you know, what would be a good sort of, like I had a friend who I loved the way he quit. It just made me laugh. Because he made a list of all the places where he smoked and all the times he smoked. So it was like after dinner, first thing in the morning, on a date, after a meal, you know, he had his list. And what he did is each week he gave up one of them. So he still smoked whenever he wanted, just not after a meal.
Oh, okay.
And then the next week, he would still smoke whenever he want, just not after a meal or in the first 20 minutes after waking up.
Okay, I see what you're saying. I've tried spacing him out, you know, like saying, well, I can only smoke one an hour or something like that, and that never worked.
Yeah, well, no, because the thing is, that's still based on denial.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's based on, see, there's a reason we smoke. One of the things I'm going to recommend, here's the short answer. I'm doing the long answer because this is radio, but here's the short answer, which is go online, go to amazon.co.uk, uh-huh, order a copy of a book called Quit Smoking Today Without Gaining Weight by Paul McKenna.
Okay.
And it's a book that I edited and I helped Paul develop, and it's got one of the best CDs, relaxation CDs, like Quit Smoking Hypnosis kind of a thing on it. Plus, in the book, there's some very simple steps laid out. And if you follow those steps, you will quit smoking. And it's based on understanding what's actually going on. You know, because we think, oh, there's this addiction or there's this or there's that. And in fact, there is a bit of chemistry going on. And understanding that chemistry is useful. But basically for most of us, when we've smoked, you know, when we were smoking, What it was that was the way that we knew to control our stress or to control our life, or it's like even now, you know, I talk to people, they go, man, I miss cigarette breaks, and they don't even miss the cigarette, they miss the cigarette break.
Oh yeah,
because that's part of how we parse out our life. It's part of how we parse out our time, and we divide it out and we make space.
Yes.
So when you understand that, then you don't try to quit until you've found other ways to get the same benefits.
Okay.
So here, let's just do a little something. You mind doing a little something right here on the phone?
Okay.
Okay. So what I want you to do is I want you to imagine that there's a part of you that does the smoking. It's the smoking part.
Okay.
Okay. And that's its job. And we're just going to pretend. But what I want to do is I want to talk to the smoking part. Okay, that sounds like her.
That's me, right?
okay. And here's what I know. I know that every part of every human being has a positive intention for that human being. So, smoking part, what's your positive intention for Kathy? What is it that you're trying to do for her, get for her, by smoking?
You're asking me that.
I'm asking you to ask the smoking part, and then you can translate for us. You can tell us what it says, and we're just playing.
It's a way of protecting myself against people.
Oh, okay, fantastic. Now, talking to Kathy, it's nice to have a part of you that's going to protect you, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, maybe the way that this part has been doing it up until now hasn't been your ideal, but it's nice to know that there's a part of you that's going to be protecting you at all times. That's its job. Now, here's the fun bit. Okay. Because you've got a creative part, right? There's got to be some creativity in Kathy. It's just got to be.
A little bit.
All right. So what I want is I want that creative part to get together with the smoking part. With the, actually, we'll change its name. We'll now call it the protecting Kathy part. And I want them to come up with at least three other ways to protect Kathy without smoking. And to just let you know when they've got them. Now, sometimes for some people, they go, oh, yeah, I could do this. I could do that. I could do that. Sometimes for some people, they don't really know what it is, but they just have a sense of, oh, yeah, well, okay. Well, there must be a way. So
yeah,
just.
I can't think of anything.
Right. But can you see that there must be a way to protect yourself without smoking?
Yeah.
I mean, just based on the fact that there are lots of people who don't smoke who are safe.
That's true.
Okay. Now, if there's one way, there must be at least two ways, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And if there's two ways, there's probably three ways, right?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Well, if there's two ways, well, then there's probably three ways.
Probably.
Probably. I mean, it's just, you know, law of averages would say.
Okay.
So then what I want to invite you to do is to first, well, let me do one thing first, actually. Now, if, I want you to check in with yourself as I ask you this, okay? If there were ways that you could give yourself all the protection and more that smoking was giving you without smoking, would that be okay with all of you? Is there any part of you that objects to that?
Oh, that'd be great.
Okay, great. Then what I want to invite, we'll call it your unconscious mind to do, is to surprise and delight you with new behaviors, new things that you start to do, new ways that you start to see things that keep you just as safe as you used to without needing the only way to be the cigarettes. And you can just kind of notice that. And you can play with that and just play with that and go order that book, listen to the CD, go through the book. And if you really want to quit.
What was the author on that again?
Paul McKenna, McKenna. And I can tell you, thousands of people, including my wife, have quit this way.
Okay.
And it's kind of fun too.
Okay,
worst
great.
Case, worst case, you relax and read an interesting book.
Okay.
Best case, you relax, read an interesting book and stop smoking.
All right.
All right?
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks for phoning in, Kathy.
You're welcome.
Okay. And, this is the thing with any sort of addiction. There's fascinating research into addiction. My favorite research comes from a guy named Dr. Ronald Rudin, who wrote a book called The Craving Brain. And essentially, what he's found to be the cause of most addictive behavior is a phenomenon that they call inescapable stress, which is the notion that the stress in someone's life is so ever-present that there's no way out. And since there's no way out, then the best way to cope with it is some sort of addictive behavior, whether it's gambling or sex or drugs or alcohol, cigarettes. It comes from inescapable stress. And there's a couple of bits of research that he cites that are fascinating that really point to how that works. And one of them, one of the pieces of research that sparked this was after the Vietnam War, a remarkable number, I don't have the stats in front of me, but a remarkable number of people came back from the Vietnam War addicted to heroin. That was sort of one of the drugs of choice. It was available over there. And, a lot of people were in the inescapable stress of that war and, became addicted to heroin. Here was what was so interesting. More than 50% of those people, when they came back from the war, just stopped. There was no withdrawals. There was none of the things that we associate with having to give up an addictive drug. They were able to just stop. Now, that made some scientists really curious because that didn't fit with the models of addiction that were sort of present in society that said, no, it's chemical and it's there. And once it's there, that's it. And you're going to have to go through all this suffering to get out of it. So they created this experiment. This is a somewhat famous experiment called Rat Park. And the way Rat Park did is what they did, and again, cruelty to animal people, I didn't do the experiment, I'm just relating it. But what they did is they got rats addicted to, I might have this wrong, I'm going to say it was heroin, but it might have been something else. And what they did is they mixed it with sugar water, and they got the rats addicted to this drug, whatever the drug was. And what they found was they created two environments for the rats. And the first environment was a very crowded, you know, I know rats like are meant to like crowded, but it was an overcrowded, very unpleasant thing. And basically the rats had a choice of drinking this, you know, sugar water or drinking healthy water and eating healthy rat food. And then they created this place that they called Rat Park. And Rat Park was rat paradise. It had everything your upwardly mobile rat could desire. It had, it was beautiful. It had food. It had space. It was designed to be an optimal rat environment. And they took rats who were already addicted to the sugary, heroiny, addictive thing, and they put them in Rat Park. And they took other rats that were addicted, and they put them back into their cramped, usual environment. Here's what was so remarkable. The rats in Rat Park voluntarily stopped drinking the heroin-laced sugar water and went for the healthier options and the cleaner water. Every single time, consistently. Whereas the rats who went back into the overcrowded, overstressed environment continued to take the drug until they either were taken off it or they died. Now, what can we learn about that? Well, there's a couple of things. There are social experiments that have been done based on this, based on the idea that, you know, overcrowding in the inner cities, overcrowding difficult environments around living and housing contribute to addiction. And if you change those will change. But a lot of the research has been psychological. Because the presence of inescapable stress, the whole thing about stress is stress, and this has been documented again and again, it doesn't come from our environment. It comes from our internal response to our environment. In other words, it comes from the thoughts that we have about our environment and how those impact us. It's our perceptions that create our stress, not the thing that's happening outside us. Now, that's not to say we wouldn't prefer better conditions. It's just that the conditions themselves don't create the stress. So if somebody's in inescapable stress, chances are in our society, that stress, certainly if you have a computer that you can listen to this show on, chances are very good that that stress is internal. It's not to do with your external environment. It's to do with the way that you are filtering and perceiving and processing and thinking about that external environment. And that's why one of the most immediate shifts you can make is to begin to create a less toxic internal environment. And you do that very simply by relaxing. So just for now, just for fun, put your hand on your heart. Take a nice, slow, gentle breath into your heart. Hold it for a moment and let go. And take another nice, slow, gentle breath into your heart. Hold for a moment and let go. And one more time. You might already feel your body beginning to relax, but take a slow, gentle breath into your heart. Hold for a moment and let go. And think a happy thought. Think about someone that you love, someone that loves you, until you get a kind of a warm, fuzzy feeling in your heart. You can think about something funny that happened, just a happy memory. Go back into that memory so that you're seeing what you saw through your own eyes, hearing what you heard, feeling those good feelings again. When you've got that warm fuzzy, just imagine that it's your favorite color and just spread that feeling up to the top of your head and down, down, down to the tips of your toes until your whole body has that good feeling inside. And just rest in that. And if you'd like, take your thumb and middle finger on whatever your dominant hand is, the hand you use most, right or left, and just squeeze them together as you're feeling this good feeling. And you're creating like an anchor, an association, so that in the future, anytime you squeeze that thumb and finger together, it'll be easier to get back to this good feeling. And the more time you spend just hanging out in this good feeling, even as little as 5 minutes a day, though 10 is better and 20 is even better than that, but even as little as 5 minutes a day, just hanging out in your own good feelings will have a remarkable difference to your internal environment, your stress, and any compensating addictive behaviors you might have developed. We're done. We got to finish for today. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Thanks to Steve and Joe in studio. Thanks to all of you for calling in and listening. We're going to be back with a brand new show next week. Until then, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.